Once more onto the breach, dear friends. Else fill the wall up with our English dead. This is Jake McClure and the Personal Wealth Coach. I'm flying solo today. Jeff is off gallivanting across the country in his silver bullet of an Airstream with his wife, my mother, and her husband, my father. They're off having a great time, so let's all wish them well. But that means that I could use some help in here. If you have something to add to the picture during the day, I've got a lot of stuff to talk about, but I certainly would appreciate another voice chiming in, though it doesn't have to be melodious in the chiming. I'm not sure that I'm chiming either. Anyway, if you'd like to join the conversation here, the phone number to call in here is 254-773-1400. This is the Personal Wealth Coach. And as a disclosure, the Personal Wealth Coach is also a fiduciary registered investment advisory firm registered with the Securities and Exchange Commission. That's who the firm registers with, and the principals of that firm are generally the same people that are on this radio program. However, just to be clear, this radio program is not fiduciary advice. It's education. That's something that I think it's pretty important for people to understand, that there is a dire dearth of education on the economics and finance world. And speaking of callers, I have a caller coming in right now on 773-1400. Caller, you are on the air. Go ahead.
Yes, sir. Good morning to you. I got a two-part question for you. The one, number one is, when this government produces money through the Treasury and they make an error on it, and then it's distributed, and then somebody finds an error, and then they put some outrageous price on it to sell it. That's the number one question. Number two is these missiles that they fire, that they had fired to Syria, you know, somebody has to flip the bill on that. And I would imagine each one of them missiles is about $25,000 a piece. You have a good day. Thank you.
All right. Thank you for the call. Appreciate that. Let me do a quick check on the price of the cruise missiles. It's a bit more than $25,000. Let's see. Price of a cruise missile. They're about... Well, they're closer to $1 million. So it is an inexpensive launch, but it says a lot to the people that use chemical weapons. So let's kind of go back and hit that point by point, then I'll talk about what's happened this week. Yes, the U.S. Mint, when it makes a mess up, when it imprints the wrong thing upside down, right side up, or backwards, they try to catch it. In fact, the vast majority of those things get caught. Those misprints are rare, which is why when they get out into circulation, they are valuable. There are a group of people that just look for misprints, and it's certainly legal. It is not illegal in any way to charge someone $5 for a $1 bill. Just ask the bank. They don't necessarily charge $5, but if they're charging you interest on a loan, they're charging you $1.05, for instance, for your $1. So you can put another price on a dollar. Just don't expect everyone to meet that price. If you go to HEB with a misprinted $1 bill that, according to the books, the internet, and all of the experts in the world, is worth $1 million, it's still a dollar at the grocery store. So keep that in mind. It's only worth what it's worth to the people that are willing to pay that. The rest of the time, it is equal to $1 only. Same's true with stamps. If you've got a postal stamp, U.S. or any other country, that government says that they will treat that stamp for the price that you agreed on when you bought it. And when they've got universal stamps where they've got the prices that change with the times versus ones that have the price printed right on it, if it's a rare enough stamp, someone else may give you more for that. That's just supply and demand, and the demand is, if some people really like misspelled words and are willing to pay for it, I wouldn't argue with them. I'd just sell it to them. That's my opinion on it. The cruise missile, Yeah, we U.S. taxpayers have to pay for that. That's part of what we pay for when we talk about the large defense budget that we have. It's a necessary component for our safety and for good behavior of the rest of the planet. The launch, I think anybody that listens to this program for any length of time knows that I personally and Jeff as well do not agree with everything that any president says, and some presidents more than others, some presidents less than others. With this particular launch on Syria, the statement was very clear, and it came from a group of countries, not just us, saying, don't use chemical weapons. If they used a nuclear weapon, we would have responded even bigger. The reality is that we don't want it to be commonplace for people to spray human-killing poisons at random. If it becomes commonplace, if it's not a tragedy every time it happens, then it becomes normal. And that's something that happens in golden eras throughout history. The golden era, one of the golden eras of Europe, culminated with the chivalric age where the knights fought honorably and all of that good stuff. It's kind of built in and then fell away drastically into total barbarism where it was okay to kill everyone. So I'd rather have the golden era than not. Just be aware that all it takes is a little bit of slipping. If it just becomes normal to be dishonorable, then everybody will do it. That's what I think it's worth spending a few million dollars on a budget the size we have for defense to send a message. No more chemicals. We know you're killing civilians. That's frowned upon. Shame, shame. But don't indiscriminately kill everyone in the region with these chemicals. Bad. Shame on you. It's a little bit of a technicality, but it's still an important technicality. I mean, from the diplomatic perspective, we've got to have some red lines. We got to say you can't just go out and spray this stuff everywhere. We've got treaties. Syria and Russia both signed those treaties that say you can't use that stuff. So we have to back up our treaties. If they signed a treaty saying they wouldn't kill any civilians, they haven't signed that. Neither have we. But if they did sign it with us, then it's our duty to enforce that treaty. So that's my opinion on that. So back to this week, the U.S. stock market, as represented by the S&P 500 stock index, was up about 1.99%. Now notice the humor there when the financial commentator says the word about or estimated and then puts two decimal places in there. So 1 point, now let's round that. It's up 2%. 2% for the week. It's down 0.65% year to date still, so beginning in January. It's up 14% 12 months ago, from 12 months ago. So this is We're still in a very nice period, even though we can recognize that we've just been through kind of a double correction. That's pretty normal to go through a double correction. And I wouldn't be too surprised to see us kind of linger here for a while, not have the huge uptick that we saw last year. Even though earnings are great, the whole thing about trade still weighing down the market. All right, so and there's some direct evidence of that here. Earnings are up. That's why the market's up this week. Crude oil futures for May are up to $67. That's up 8.6% for the week. And I'm going to come back to that statement in just a moment. Caller on 773-1400, you are on the air with the Personal Wealth Coach. Go ahead.
Good morning, Jake. I was just wondering if you could show spread some light on a TOD, a transfer on death, and I'll hang up and get my answer off the air.
Okay, sounds good. All right, a TOD, otherwise known as TOD. TOD can appear on your account. Doesn't matter if it's a bank account or a normal, they're called, it's basically the vanilla. They're non-qualified. They're not a retirement account. You can have a TOD on a joint account. So JTWROSTOD. How's that for an acronym? You can't pronounce it at all. Joint tenancy with right of survivorship as well as a transfer on death. That's kind of like having a contingent beneficiary. So if you're joint in an account and one of you passes away, it goes to the other one, the other person that's jointly holding that account. In the event the second one passes, it goes to the transfer on death person. You can put a beneficiary on the vast majority of your accounts that are not retirement accounts, retirement qualified accounts. And what that does is it means it doesn't have to pass through probate. It doesn't go through a will. A document is provided to the bank or the custodian of the money saying this is the death certificate, certified copy. It then automatically will pass to the person that's listed as transfer on death. Now, to get into the specifics of estate planning, first of all, if you haven't planned at all, you should. Second, if you have a complicated estate, you should talk to an attorney as well. We work with a lot of attorneys at the Personal Wealth Coach to make sure that the documents that are set up by the attorney make sense according to the financial vehicles that are supposed to pass. Because some of those, for instance, in IRAs already have a beneficiary on them. If you're in a community property state, which the vast majority of the listeners here are in Texas, it means that the default for your retirement account is your spouse, unless you actively change that. And changing the beneficiary on your retirement account requires your spouse's signature. So that's an important little factor there. There's a lot of stuff that goes on when discussing beneficiaries. It's more complicated than it should be, just like the tax code and kind of the vast majority of everything else that we talk about these days. Too much complexity, it's a problem. All right, so back to crude oil. The U.S. crude oil features for May, the futures for May, that's contracts that would actually be delivered deep into next month, we're up to $67.39 a dollar, or a barrel. That's up 8.6% from last week at this time. If this were over, simply over the issues in Syria and Nigeria, we wouldn't see an 8.6% rise in the Texas Brent futures. Just wouldn't happen. So the crude oil price today for West Texas Intermediate is 67.39. Texas oil doesn't tend to shift as rapidly as the rest of the world's oil for Middle Eastern events. It does shift rapidly when prices change on the tools to get the oil out of the ground. Steel prices and aluminum prices have come way up. So that's what we're seeing. Expect to see a little bit more of that until the technology gets there to counteract it, which it may not. It may take a while because prices are going up across the board. We're seeing inflation for the first time in close to a decade at a rate that is higher than the Federal Reserve's target rate. Where in March, that whole quarter for March, inflation was up 2.9%. So what we're looking at there is it's an interesting little shift from what we've been seeing for a while. That's pretty close to a 3% rate. Expect more interest rate rises from the Federal Reserve. Expect to see higher prices in the stores, but also expect, it's going to be hard to get, but expect raises from your employer. If you're living on Social Security, at the end of the year, you may get a raise. Because once inflation starts coming in, everybody's got to have their prices go up or they lose money. So you raise prices on steel, you raise prices on aluminum, expect everything that's made by that or uses those items in the making, the prices are going to go up. And easiest way to look at that, I've said this quite a lot the last few weeks. If you look at a tariff the same way you look at any other tax, you just call it a tax because that's what it is. Who gets the money from the tariff? Well, the government does. So that's a tax. It's just about any way of looking at it. Usually the power to tax resides with Congress. In the case of strategic importance, Congress has handed that authority to the president, and the president has exercised that authority. Some say for good reason, some say for bad reason. If you look at it and say, hey, we're not importing, we're not mining our own iron, we're not creating our own aluminum here, there's a problem, then some may say that's a good idea to put a tariff there. I don't think that's the best way to do it. I think giving some incentives to Americans to do it is better than just raising the prices across the board. That has an untargeted effect. It's diffused across everyone. And very simple approach to that is a subject that most people are familiar with. The syntax, not as in the error in a computer, syntax error. I mean like the tax that is put on alcohol or on tobacco in many states. If you look at the places, the states with the highest sin tax, what you will find, surprisingly, is that the price of tobacco in those states is higher. Why is that surprising? It's not. If you raise the cost of buying something, that means the price goes up because the manufacturers of the tobacco, the growers and the distributors, when they're putting it into their packaging and so on, they're not going to take less profit than they're currently taking. They just raise the price. When they raise the price, staggeringly, the price goes up. As the price goes up, anything that would need to buy that item to make something else, those prices are going to go up too. So in the case of tobacco, it's not that there's not like a chain reaction that goes down because people are not opening up packages of cigarettes and building some high-tech machine out of them. So the price only goes up for the end user. If you raise the price on paper, it would raise the prices on books, on newspapers, on packaging, on cigarettes. Not very much. There's not a lot of paper there. If you raise the price on steel, car prices are going to go up, tool prices are going to go up, and everything else that's made out of steel is going to go up. It's not a big surprise. But to see oil prices go up, part of that rise is due to instability in the Middle East. But if you go back a year and look through the last 12 months, the last 24 months, the last 36 months, and you look at instability in the Middle East, we had a lot more instability in the Middle East just a few months ago. And a year ago, it was even more. 2 years ago, it was at huge proportions. And 3 years ago, it's hard to remember back that far, I know, but there were videos of people being decapitated. It's not that long ago. That's a lot more instability, and yet the prices weren't going up at that point. So if the prices weren't going up at that level of instability when they go up almost 10% in 1 week, you can't blame it on a cruise missile attack on Syria or a riot in Nigeria, because come on, the Islamic State was a bit bigger than that. It means that the tariffs are having the expected effect. It means that prices are going up. And that's a piece of news. I'm going to pull up another quick piece here from the conference board. Again, this is one of those areas that if people listen to us on a regular basis, they hear us quoting from the conference board. The leading indicators are still up. This is end of February, end of March. We should be getting in probably a week, we'll get the March data. But as of February, everything looks good. Now, we've had some changes since then. And if we look at the deficit in trade, what you'll see is that we have a big uptick in our exports. We're exporting a lot more than we were. But at the same time, we're importing even more of an uptake than we're exporting. So we're not making headway there as far as the tariffs are concerned. And this will be more news will come out on that in the near future when we talk about trade deficits and so on. We've got another caller on 773-1400. Caller, you are on the air. Go ahead.
Yes, sir. Excuse me. Enjoy the show. I know you can't give specific investment advice, but typically in inflationary periods, a lot of investors go to consumer staples, I guess is what they call them. Are there any other categories of investments that are good plays in a inflationary environment. I'll hang up the message. Thank you.
All right. Appreciate the call. Yeah. Fascinatingly, in an inflationary environment, most of the stock market's generally pretty good. Having an existing bond portfolio is dangerous. And that's something that we haven't had a big inflationary environment for a while. We've talked about the dangers of bonds and rising interest rates and so on. When I say most of the stock market is good in inflationary periods, obviously there's downturns in the stock market and there's riskier aspects of different parts of the stock market. The idea when I say inflationary, there are parts of the stock market that are really bad in inflationary time periods. If you have any item that has a fixed cost, a fixed contracted obligation to pay or sell at a given price, sometimes utilities have that wrapped into them, and that's where you have to do some research, that if they basically are in for the next 10 years, they have to charge a certain rate, then they're in trouble. If the rate is based on the price that they pay, it doesn't make that much difference. But if it's based on a price that they're paying today and the inflation's hitting, the reason why most of the stock market's not hugely damaged by inflation is because it's made up of a bunch of corporations that can change their prices as inflation hits. So if it costs them more to make a product, either because they're having to pay their employees more or because they have to pay more for the items that make the product or a combination of all of that, they just raise the price. So their profit margins stay relatively the same. Now, people during that period may wind up paying more for the company. So the share price might go up proportionally as well. It won't be exactly proportional. That would be kind of insane. People don't say, I believe this is worth 2.9% more because inflation is up 2.9%. You don't go to the grocery store and say, I'm going to pay 2.9% more for this banana on purpose because of inflation. But that tends to be what happens. There's an equilibrium that's almost imaginary. Because if anybody ever looks at the stock market, equilibrium would be like this perfect point of sanity where the prices are all exactly right. We don't see that. We see a lot of volatility. Even on calm days, you have movements up and down in the market and movements up and down on most of the stocks in the market. So inflation, I would stay away from some of the areas that have fixed prices. If you know, for instance, of... Here's an example of something that happened years back when the oil prices were going up really, really fast. The airlines were in a lot of trouble because they locked in their contractual rates for buying fuel oil for their aircraft at a rate that was way too high. And so they didn't get to benefit when the price of oil came down. And the airlines that didn't have their prices locked in were able to undercut them, and it put a lot of the larger aircrafts in a lot of trouble. So that's kind of – inflation is easier to deal with than deflation. It's still not good. Anybody that was around for the late 70s can say that very clearly. Inflation is really bad. It is a drain on the entire economy. It means that the growth that we – are creating gets diffused with imaginary growth. Because if your earnings are going up and you say, look, our earnings are going up, but you look at it as anything other than a percentage of what's being spent, it looks like they're going up a lot when with inflation they're actually going up a lot less than that. So expect more interest rate hikes. Expect oil to have a gradual upward move. Now, we're not too far along to prevent large-scale inflation. Inflation comes, you know, people talk about this a lot. What is inflation? Inflation just means that if you're paying more across the board for the same things, They haven't gotten better. Their quality hasn't changed. Their quantity hasn't changed. And over time, you just are paying more for it. That's inflation. The Consumer Price Index is one measure of that, where they take a group of items and they say, okay, what are the prices of these items? And then they track those prices forward. There's a problem with that tracking method. There's no perfect tracking method, because what if a television is in that hypothetical basket? It's a little strange to put a television in a basket, but you know, some people like baskets. All right, so think of your massive cabinet Curtis Mathis television in a basket. Well, it's not going to work very well, but you got to have a big basket. How do you compare inflation on technology that had a giant tube in it, was made mostly out of wood, that had a lot of handwork done to make it beautiful, to today's televisions, which are made in machines with an occasional human hand touching them in places that haven't upgraded their manufacturing processes yet? This is why we've seen deflation in the electronics world, because the manufacturing methodologies and the technology that we're using to actually create the items, not just manufacture them, is getting better. Transistors are now small enough that you can put billions on them on a little one inch square chip, where if you're thinking of Curtis Mathis, you could hold a transistor in your hand, and that was a pretty small one. That's where we're going. So we've got technology that is a constant attack on inflation. But if enough of the raw materials go up in price, not because it's harder to acquire them, but because there's a new tax on them, expect that ripple effect to go across. And, you know, in an investment situation, this is an area that's going to touch a lot of nerves, I think. So just get ready. Just calm for a moment. High inflation is not good for real estate. Just think about that for a moment, and people kind of go, what do you mean? And it means the prices are going up. Well, if you have a mortgage and the mortgage is at a high interest rate, it has a negative impact on the length of time you want to keep that house. The shorter the time period you keep the house, the more houses are on the market. That's a greater supply. So deflation has a worse negative effect on people that have mortgages at the higher interest rates. If a bank is looking at giving you a loan right now and you've got a pre-approval, it's probably a good idea to look at that very seriously, because interest rates look like they're going to be going up for a while. If you're buying and selling houses right now, know that there is a downward push. Doesn't mean it's going to push it down. It just may mean that it won't rise as fast. It could mean that it will go down. There's a downward push on the price of real estate, because people buy real estate based on the monthly payment on that real estate, unless they have the cash to buy the whole thing. That's a very small percentage of real estate purchases. If they're looking at the monthly payment, and we're looking around and seeing an inflationary environment that looks like it's going to continue for a while, then the payment is going to go up, which means people will be able to afford less house, which means that there will be a lowering of the prices. And if you look in Central Texas is a really, really good bellwether for real estate for the rest of the country, because we have a lot of turnover here. This is something that I find fascinating. It's quite damaging in many cases to the armed forces and to the soldiers in the armed forces and to veterans. So it's important for them to be aware of this. If you're buying a house in, say, Killeen or Harker Heights, and there's a big deployment, that's the time to buy, because you can look at the online and app form of Trulia or Zillow or Realtor.com. And if you watch it in a fairly disciplined way, which is kind of rare for people that aren't in the house market, but if you're just watching it you'll see that, you know, on a given day, 1 to 5 houses will come up on the market. And then in Killeen, you may suddenly see 20 houses all come on the same day, and the next day 30 houses, and the day after that another 30 houses. Well, that's a really good example of when a deployment is going on, and people don't want to be paying for a house that they're not living in. The family wants to go live somewhere else while the soldier is deployed. So keep that in mind as well, is that anytime you have a rising interest rate environment, which is part of an inflationary trend, bonds get very difficult. And this is, that has a direct impact on mortgages, because a mortgage is a bond. And house prices are directly affected by the cost of financing. The cost of financing is that bond again. So as interest rates go up, it means that people that have the low interest rate loans, that right now have already locked in their 30-year or whatever loan, that's an important factor. It means that when they go to sell, they may get a lot more than they expected, but the gain that they get is part of the inflation as well, because the house isn't any different than it was. They may be paying less per month than their neighbor who just moved in for the same house. But when they go to sell, all that gain that they say, look how much I made, well, the next house that they buy is going to have a difference in the monthly payment unless the housing prices come down. So keep that in mind. It's unfortunately complicated, but not overly so. It's no more complicated than if you think back, and this is complicated, to middle school or junior high and the effect of insulting one person or making friends with one person. There are repercussions. All of their friend groups are affected. All of your friend groups are affected. If all you, and this is my, one of my favorite thoughts about economics. If everyone thought the same way they did in middle school, only applied it to economics, we'd have a lot better idea of what's going on in the future. We're all still a bunch of middle school, junior high kids, only we're at governmental levels and at corporate levels. And when Google insults Apple and says, we're going to make the Android operating system, and they have their spat over it, it's not that different than a junior hire saying, I like your girlfriend, and I'm going to start courting her. Or saying, I like girls and I don't want to hang out with boys anymore. So, and I realize that that may sound simplistic, but if you've ever listened to the internal politics of a junior high full class, you will realize that it's not simplistic at all, and somebody should have some diplomatic degrees in order just to keep up with what's going on. I've got to play some commercials, and I will be back on the other side with more of the Personal Wealth Coach. If you would like to join in the conversation, the phone number in here is 254-773-1400, and we'll be back on the other side with more of the Personal Wealth Coach.
I believe in you.
And I'm back with more of the Personal Wealth Coach. This is Jake McClure, and if you would like to join the conversation, the phone number in here is 254-773-1400. I have a couple more interesting things to talk about. The word interest, I find that particularly interesting. What is interest? I mean, we can think about all the different meanings of interest. To be involved. The original uses, in financial sense, the money paid for the use of money lent, that was from 1520. That was one of the earliest uses of the word interest. If you say I'm interested in something, it's derived really from that concept. Interest is a French, old French, basically to be in between, inter-es, to be in between. So this concept of being interested in a subject comes from a later definition of beyond the money lending and money coming back, because it shouldn't be it is quite funny. In the 1500s, church law said it was illegal to loan money from one Christian to another. You would have big problems called usury. It's bad. Compensation due to defaulting debtor. That was their definition of it. Interest would be you're paying me to be involved between you and the person you're paying. So I'm providing the money. So it was kind of a loophole. I'm the in-between man. I'm the middleman. That's what interest means. It means middleman. And it kind of still means that. It's kind of funny. So the middleman comes in and says, this isn't usury. You're paying me for my service of communicating with you about the money that you need, or communicating with the person you want to pay about the money that you'll be paying through me. So I find that quite deep. So the meaning of curiosity, or feeling that something concerns one, appreciative or sympathetic regard, I'm showing her a lot of interest. If you think of it in light of what we were just saying, it's very different. That only came about, that use of the word was the late 1770s. Sorry, I needed to do this side note piece, because when we're talking about rising interest rates, really what we're talking about is the cost of the middleman. If you're buying a house, the middleman, there's multiple middle people. There's the bank that is paying from their own coffers for the house, and then you are paying them for their interest in the matter. That's why we call it interest. Hopefully you can find at least some enjoyment for this absolutely useless trivia that I've added to the day. All right, so what else is going on this last week? There's been a lot going on. What's going on the last month, the last year? Trade talks with China. It's a big area. I have a negative view on any impediment to trade. In fact, what I saw when we were attacked on September 11th was an attack on the center of trade of the United States, the World Trade Center. That's absolutely what it was. I mean, that's the stock exchange is there. The ability for us to do business is wrapped around trade. If Islamic extremists are attacking us there, it's because they know that's what our values lie in, our ability to have good business dealings with the people around us. There came out of the fall of the Soviet Union these ideas that any country that had a McDonald's would never go to war with another country that had a McDonald's. It didn't hold up. Russia invaded Ukraine. There have been some other instances in Eastern Europe where it didn't hold up. The idea, though, is that the more trade we have with people, the closer we are to them and the less likely we are to go to war. If you start taking away that trade, the more likely we are to have other differences. So that's my kind of foundational approach. In a negotiation, if you're talking about advancing trade in some way, and you say, hey, you're stealing our intellectual property, which, just to make sure everybody's clear on this, China is the biggest culprit in the world on the theft of intellectual property. There's just no country anywhere near as far along in their sophistication in theft of technology. They take software, they take hardware, they make it over, and they sell it to their friends, their neighbors, and to other consumers in China, and sometimes on the internet to us. If you're using Alibaba and you look for almost any name brand, expect that not to really be a name brand, because intellectual property theft is one of the big issues that we have with China. I cannot emphasize enough that there is a problem there, a major problem. it needs to be fixed. How do we fix the idea with China to say, hey, your intellectual property rights need to match ours? You need to come up and punish people for taking an idea from someone else and then reaping the benefits. So rather than follow that path, let's go back the other direction on the path. Why is that important? Innovation, the urge to innovate, is very rarely associated with pure altruism. Just for the good of everyone else, I will do this thing. It's a pretty rare reason to create or put a huge amount of work into something. It happens. Let's not discount that. I mean, if you look around at the number of libraries that we have in the United States, that was from altruism. Now, the source of the money may not have been altruistic, but the libraries themselves, the education that we've received through public education facilities, comes from altruism. But innovation tends to come through some kind of combination of greed and altruism. So as an economist, two factors and kind of a spectrum between the two factors enter into my analysis of any corporation, any municipality, country. When I say, all right, on the spectrum of altruism and greed, where do they fall? Because good business means that you've got to be a little bit greedy, because otherwise you won't stay in business. If you don't make a profit, you're not going to be in business. But if you're not altruistic to some extent, nobody's going to do business with you again. You're too greedy. You're charging way too much for the item. Unless you're the only one that sells that item, people are not going to come back unless you have some altruism. If you go to a restaurant and they charge you $80 for a hamburger, that better be a really good hamburger. If it's not a really good hamburger, or at least a really good atmosphere, it's really unlikely, especially if it looks exactly like all the other hamburger joints, you're just not going to pay that for a hamburger. That's too much greed. Scales too weighted in one direction. Too much greed can kill a business. Too much altruism can kill a business. You can expand that up to a corporate level. You can expand that up to a municipality. You can expand that up to a country. In order to have a long-lasting good relationship, we have to balance greed with altruism. We are leaning heavily into the greed side, and you can see it very clearly in the statement, America First. That is a statement that if you were doing business with someone else, and they said, instead of the customer is first, they said, we're first, it's unlikely that you would continue doing business there. So when you expand up a simple idea that we can all understand fairly easily and put it at a larger scale, it doesn't change the meaning. And unfortunately, when we look at things at really, really small scale and really, really big scale, we think that the meaning is somehow different. Because in our normal business practices, we don't say things like, or generally, most of us don't anyway, I'm never going to trade with China again. Some people do say that, but not many. If you're looking at, I think steel workers are in problem, are in trouble. So I'm going to charge more for people selling me steel. You can see that the complexity starts getting going up there. The concept is still the same. If we don't balance the altruistic part of what we're doing, then we lose all our trading partners. Again, go back to junior high. You've got to mix the altruism with the greed. Even the most popular kid in school, if all they ever did was be greedy, they would not be the most popular kid in school very long. Right now, we're the most popular kid in school. The United States. People come here from all over the world to go to our schools, university level, not our K-12.
4 minutes
to do business.
4 minutes away from your next Fox News.
To learn business styles, to learn innovation. We're the one everybody comes to. And yes, people have been taking advantage of us. But some of that advantage that they've been taking has been based on our own altruism. If we look at someone and anybody, and we've been giving them something, and we say, hey, you really should change your act, as call it the cousin or the uncle that keeps coming back to the family and saying, hey, I need a little bit extra. Hey, can I have a little bit more? And you say, hey, you need to change or we have to stop giving you this. Well, that makes sense. But charging them to enter the house, say, no, you need money to come in here. I'm not going to sell you at a cut rate anymore. You're going to pay me even to talk about trade. That doesn't work either. That just shuts off the whole trade, especially if that uncle that you've been giving the money to for a long time is one of your best customers. And in the case of China, we're the best customer, but they're pretty close to one. They are at least one of our best customers. We have to balance the altruism part. We can go overly altruistic. That's a problem. And I think the Obama administration had that problem. If we swing too hard in the other direction, we're not fixing the problem. We are magnifying the problem. We're making it bigger. Trade needs to be a very clear message that is consistent from one president to the other. We want free trade, but you need to clean up your act or we're not going to have free trade with you. As soon as we say the reason why we're not having free trade with you is strategic or because we're trying to protect American jobs, we're diffusing the message to say we're, you know, the message up to now is saying we'll compete with anybody. We'll outcompete anybody. We're better at this than you are. But because we're better, we're going to show good sportsmanship and we're going to let you trade with us very easily. As soon as we flip that, it's just like not launching cruise missiles on countries that use chemical weapons. If you don't enforce an idea, the idea loses power. And up till now, our idea, the idea that we've enforced with the world is one, we're the good guys. Two, we push for free, open trade, free, open choice of governments. If we start losing out on that, if we start stepping back from that message, don't expect the rest of the world to blindly keep going in the direction we've been pointing for the last century. They're going to go their own way. We're removing some of the leadership from the world. And I'm about out of time for this hour. I've got a lot more to talk about next hour. Trade, oil, psychology of why we make the decisions that we make. Some of the things that are dragging down the states at this point in their budgets. The problems that are ongoing with cyber attacks. All that good stuff. But in the meantime, if you want to contact us off the air, the phone number to call to talk to us about your own investments, toll-free 1-800-914-7526 or locally 254-947-1111. You can also email us at jeff@tpwc.com or jake@tpwc.com. Till next hour.
News Talk KTEM, AM 1400, Temple, Texas, and streaming online at ktemnews.com.